So let me just go through the routine things first. Please turn off your cell phones or put them on buzz or something like that. Typically, you know, how much of an introduction is determined by how quickly an event sells out. I think all the seats for this event were sold almost immediately when we posted it, so I'm sure we really don't have to say very much about Anthony Bolton at all. Let me say one thing about upcoming events, which is part of my responsibility. We have three things coming up. We have Basil Powell, Great Landscapes of the World. That will be on the 11th. Am I right about this? On the 23rd. Tomorrow. Yes. Excuse me. We have the 29th, we have Gordon Krovitz, the ex-publisher of the Wall Street Journal, talking about whether journalism can make money on the web. If all the reporters here are desperate for a viable future like myself, probably should be very good. And then on the 2nd of December, we have John Micklethwaite, who's the editor of The Economist, and other than myself, who's desperate to see if I have a future and therefore he's interesting to me, the rest of you might want to come too. He's going to talk about The Economist and mass intelligence. Let me go back to Mr. Bolton just for one second. Again, my name is Tom Easton. I'm with The Economist. We are not a finance club. We're not an investment club. I think that there was once a famous statement by Benjamin Graham, who was offered a joint professorship at Columbia in philosophy and at the business school. And he said that successful investing, that investing is drawing the distinction between the current value of a stock, which is determined by a voting machine, and the longer-term value, which is defined by a weighing machine. So I think really the role of any successful fund manager is to try to understand the world as it is perceived to be today and try to draw a distinction between what it is perceived to be today and how it really is, because that's how people will see it tomorrow. So in that light, I'm very hopeful that Mr. Bolton can shed some light on China and how we see the world, actually how the world sees itself at the moment, and maybe perhaps how the world should see itself given what is going on right now. So with that, let me turn this over for 20 minutes. I encourage you to have lots of questions. I will call on everybody, so please.
Great. Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for that introduction. It's really nice to be back here. I think it was about a year ago I was last here. My life slightly changed since then. I was about to retire, and then I had this sort of mad idea that I would keep on going and do something completely different. So let me talk about what I'm doing, that different thing that I'm doing. Try and block the screen. I'm going to talk a little bit about my investment experience of investing in China before I did this, my thesis about China, why I'm optimistic about China. I'm going to talk a little bit about my view of the world, particularly from a stock market perspective, and then some conclusions. So what gives me any right to run a Chinese fund? Well, I first came to visit China in 2003, and I was very taken by what I saw. I, at that stage, had just given up running a European fund, a very large European fund. And I gave up quite a lot of things, and I said, I'd like to do one new thing. And I said the new thing would be looking at China. And I thought, if I knew a little bit more about China than the average European manager, that would help me. I think there's nothing like concentrating the mind by actually putting some money to work. So I, in 2004, started investing some of my fund in Chinese stocks. It was only about 3 or 4% of the fund, but being the largest mutual fund in the UK, that was a few hundred million dollars, so it was a reasonable amount of money. And I started coming to the mainland twice a year to see companies, and I did that till I gave up running my fund at the end of 2007. As I said, I was out here in the autumn last year, and I was doing a job really mentoring the analysts and talking about trying to pass on what I've learned and talking about my views on the market. but it brought me closer to China again. And that's where I had this idea that I've just, before I finish completely, I've got to have a go at what I think is probably the most interesting investment opportunity of the decade. Okay, so what's my thesis about China? And look, the first thing to say, I know some of you will know a lot more about China than I do. I'm the new boy, but these are my observations for somebody coming from Europe here. There are really three things that make, or three key things that make me excited. One is the position of China in a low growth world. The second one is the changing drivers of growth in China. And the third one is the fact that the market is less well researched. Let me just expand a little bit on each of those. So in my view of the world, I think the developed world is in a below par growth environment for the next few years. Jeremy Grantham, who I think is a fantastic observer and investor, but he also writes very well about investment. He's talked about, we've had the seven fat years, we're going to have seven lean years. I don't know if it's going to be seven, but I think we're in for some lean years in the West, and particularly in America and Europe. Now, China growth is going to come down. I think it's going to come down to 7 to 8%. I think credit's too strong at the moment. The growth has been too strong. I think next year you'll start to see that cool. But I think that growth rate is still going to look really attractive in a low-growth world. And I'll come on and talk a little bit later about my view in what's going to lead the next stage of the bull market that I think we've entered. In terms of the growth drivers in China, it used to be exports, it used to be low-value manufacturing. In the future, I think it's going to be consumption, it's going to be services, and it's going to be high-value manufacturing. And I think we've seen that, you know, it's in the latest five-year plan that that's what the Chinese want to do. And normally, when they decide that they will do something, they achieve it. It's not going to be without some challenges along the way. But I think that's a really important change. So most of my focus on my fund are in these new areas. I'm less keen on exporters, on commodities, and on infrastructure, which I think is more yesterday's story. And then the last thing, you know, what really excites a stock picker is to find a market that isn't so well researched. And in my time in following Europe, the markets went, say, particularly in continental Europe, from being under-researched to being over-researched. My observation here is still that stocks and markets are under-researched compared to the West. It will change, and it's gradually changing. Not in every area are they under-researched, but especially when you get to medium and smaller companies. And it's been very refreshing to find companies that I've found no broker research on at all. That is almost impossible to find in the West. Then the last sort of part, I felt, you know, what do I bring to the story? Well, I bring experience. You know, I've been around following financial markets for a long time. And I thought, if you combine that with our local team here, and the reason for me coming to Hong Kong, this is where our team is. And we have already one of the biggest teams on China. We manage 20 billion US of money invested in Chinese securities, mainly obviously in Hong Kong listed shares. You know, we have very big resources. So if you can take their knowledge of the companies and of the industries and combine it with my long-term experience, that really the two together, I hope, will really create something that's worth it. I give some of the background here. We've also had a private equity and business in China for 14 years, and that's another resource I can use. So what are the areas that I'm investing in? I have to say I'm more growthy than I was in my funds that I used to run in the UK and Europe. And one group of stocks that I'm looking for is stocks I think that can grow for the next 5 to 10 years, growing, say, 20-30% per annum, that look like businesses that I invested in the West when I can buy them at a much earlier stage of their development in China, particularly if they're sort of brand leaders in their particular area of expertise. And there I will try and buy them on a price earnings multiple. I mean, I'll look at a number of things, but I'm trying to buy them on
where I can buy them 12 months forward, a PE of under 20 times, but I'll strip out the next net cash, and most of these companies have got net cash. The second area is more a typical value area. These are companies that are probably not growing as fast as the first lot, maybe 15%-ish. But often these are selling at lower valuations than their Western counterparts. Often these are the medium and smaller stocks, and that area really interests me. In terms of sectors, because of what I was saying earlier, I've got a very much focus on consumption and services, includes financial services, includes pharmaceuticals, and I've listed some of the sectors here. I'm not going to go through them all. Now, one of the things people say, but these sectors are already quite highly valued. I think they are pretty reasonably valued, and some of them are highly valued. I think if my view of the world and my view of China is right, I think these stocks are going to become very overvalued at some stage over the next few years. But also what I've tried to look is the indirect plays, the ones that are less obvious, that aren't valued as highly as the obvious plays. Most of my fund is in Hong Kong listed or US listed Chinese stocks. I've got about 15% in the US listed Chinese stocks. I've got about 10% in A shares, that's using broker quota today. We've been given a QFII license, but we haven't yet been told the quantum of that license. Nearly always when I'm looking at companies, with one exception, I found that the A shares, if I'm looking at consumption or pharmaceuticals or whatever it is, the A shares are more expensive than the H shares. So I haven't seen a need to rush into the A shares. The one exception is financials. And there, the main A shares that I own today are in the financial area, where amongst the dual listed shares, you'll probably know that the A shares are often selling at a discount or a significant discount to the Hong Kong listed shares. If my view of the world is right, I think we might even see in the future a time where the Hong Kong listed shares, because they're the ones sensitive to global money, trade in on average at a premium to the A shares. Challenges, there are lots of challenges. I mean, I knew a number of companies before I came here in March, but one of the things I wanted to do is see as many companies that I thought might fit the brief that I was looking for. I've seen over 200, or had meetings with over 270 companies since I've been here. So it's been a sort of frantic timetable, agenda of seeing lots and lots of companies and trying to find the interesting ones. Now, language is a problem. I don't speak Mandarin. All the rest of the team, our team speak, they're all Mandarin speakers. I'm not good at languages. I knew it would be a bridge too far. But to date, two-thirds of the meetings have been in English and about a third have been in Mandarin. Can I get something? But I find even in a translated meeting, I can pick up things and nuances and the way the management talk about their business that perhaps are less experienced analysts who have the detailed knowledge, but they've not seen lots and lots of companies as I have over the years, than they pick up. And then there's the management quality, the corporate governance, and certainly it's much more variable than I've been used to in the West. I mean, I knew this would be a challenge for me. The good companies, I think, are as good as anything I see in the West. The poorer companies are definitely less good. I think some of that is immaturity. I think some of it is not understanding what equity investors, what having outside shareholders means. Most of my fund is in medium and smaller size stocks in private companies. I only have got a minority of the fund in large companies and SOEs. But working out the quality of the management and whether what they're telling us is the actuality is key one of my tasks that I have to do. Let me now switch to talking about the world as I see it. And a little bit about where I think we are. So I've been saying for a while, and I think I probably said this when I talked in a year ago here, that I thought we were in a multi-year bull market. Well, the first phase of that finished in earlier this year. We then had a decent consolidation like many bull markets have. I think now we're in the second phase. And as you'll hear, I think it's going to be different. In the first phase, it was very much a mirror image of the bear market. So what went down the most in the bear market recovered the most in the first phase of this bull market. It was about cyclical companies. It was about low-quality companies. This next stage, in a low-growth world, I believe it's all going to be what investors are going to be turned on by and pay up for are companies that can grow in a low-growth environment, or regions or countries. So I expect them to pay up for growth, and I expect that growth to get quite overvalued. My view, I mean, I'm not an economist, but on all the evidence I see, I think a double dip is unlikely. I don't think we're going back into recession, but I think growth is going to be much lower in the West than we've seen typically in the past. And I think it makes it quite unprecedented, because I don't remember a time when the outlook looks below trend in the West, and most people are aware of that and understand that, and understand it's likely to continue for a while. I think, for instance, for companies, that's going to be a challenge. If you've got one foot in developed world and one foot in the emerging world, you've got employees with completely different environments and sort of ideas of rewards. So I think it can be quite challenging. Now, I think I said before, what do I look at in trying to judge markets, to time markets? And it's not easy. I mean, as everyone knows, timing market. What I look less at is the economic outlook. I know that's what most other people look at. What I look at are three key things. I look at the patterns of history. So how far and how fast, or how long we've been going up in a bear market or down in a bear market. I look at valuations, particularly long-term valuations in the context of 20 years plus, if possible. And then I look at sentiment or behavior of investors. And if all these three confirm each other, either in terms that they're showing, that they're flashing a red light that people are being too risky and too gung-ho, that's a warning, and I found that's an indicator of tops. And vice versa, I found if everyone is too cautious and valuations are low, etc., and the bear market's been going on for a long time, that's often a sign of a change. But of course, most of the time, we're in between those extremes. And that's, I think, where we are today. But I'm going to show you some charts. A number of them are US-based, because I think the data in the US is good. But for US, read the world. Now, probably not many of you will be able to see this in detail. But this is first chart. This is a long-term chart of the US market. And at the bottom, it shows, it goes back 60 years, and it shows bull and bear markets in blue, and the bull markets are in blue and the bear markets are in red. We're up, what are we up? 81%. Now that's a good bull market in terms of the extent of the rise. If you look particularly against that sort of bunch going back to the 60s and 70s. Not as strong as some of the very strong bull markets. I think perhaps because the bear market was so strong, you might argue that this could be a stronger than average bull market. But I think in terms of extent, we're getting there. If you look at it slightly differently, and this is looking on the horizontal axis at the length in terms of time of the bull market, and on the vertical axis, the extent of the rise, you can see how the market looked earlier this year before it had its correction, and how it's looked after the correction. And I think you can see time-wise, this is still a relatively young market. But I would say, in terms of the patterns of histories, we're starting to get into the more dangerous zone. I think probably by the time we get into the second half of next year, this will be flashing more caution. So that's the first indicator. What about valuations? Well, here again, I'm looking at America. This is a sort of 30-year view of the price-earnings ratio on the market. And it's showing, we're somewhere in the middle, actually, in terms of historical valuations. And excuse me, I know some of you, if I might be a bit carried away in the technicalities of when I talk about jargon and stuff of investment. Please excuse me, and if there's anything you want to ask me later. I'll try and answer it. But here, it's a typical valuation measure, and I think this shows that we're about, you know, I don't think this is yet in a dangerous stage. If we look in terms of equities relative to bonds, the red line is the equity yield, and the blue line is the yield on bonds. And you can see, generally, those move in tandem. But recently, they've diverged, and I think equities definitely look cheap relative to bonds. These are some charts from Brank Credit Analyst. I think they do some very good work on long-term work and quantitative work on markets. The top chart is a long-term bond valuation chart, and the bottom chart is a long-term equity valuation chart, again for the US. And I think it shows fairly clearly the sort of band that the market normally trades at, but you can see bonds are expensive against history. I think that's a warning light for bonds, but equities on this measure are reasonable against history. And then lastly, they do an emerging market valuation. This is a PE based on 2 years smoothed earnings. And this, you know, valuations are higher than they've been in the last 10 years. But if you go back to the 90s, I think valuations are still okay. So my net on valuations, I think valuations can still go quite a bit higher. And I think that's going to be one of the drivers of this next phase of the bull market. The third thing I look at is this sentiment, so behavior. If you watch what investors are actually doing, are they behaving in a very risk-averse way or a very aggressive way? And you can take messages. Now, I can't show you all the things that I could show you here. But here, again, this is US-centric. This is the top is the flows into US equity mutual funds. The middle is flows into US bond funds. And the bottom is flows into US cash funds. Well, what you see, let's take the middle one. In bonds, you want to start to be more cautious when people have been net buyers of an area for a length of time. I think, as you see in bonds, they have been. Now, you know, this can go on for longer. But I want to contrast that with the equity flows. And you can see that they've been all over the place in the last few years, up and down, up and down. Nothing like they were in that big blue phase going back. So I don't see anything. I'd be much more worried if we'd had, you know, 9 months of continuous inflows into equities. That's much more typical of what you get at tops of markets. And then bringing it to this part of the world, and again here, there are different things I could have shown you. I've got two graphs based on UBS's proprietary flows. The top left one, and these are shorter term, much shorter term. They're a couple of years. Is flows into Hong Kong, and again, when it's above the line, it's positive. When it's below, it's negative. And then there are flows into Chinese equities on the right. And the interesting one to me, I mean, Hong Kong, there have been some quite big flows, particularly until that stopped in the last few weeks. But the China one, for most of this year, net flows have been out of China. Now, you might say, well, maybe UBS's flows are not typical of all banks or brokers, but I think that they were likely to be. That, again, isn't typical to me of a peak. And it's interesting, when I look at surveys of which emerging markets international investors like best, China doesn't typically tend to come at the top of those. There tend to be other markets. And then the bottom one is on actual. This is hedge funds net exposure. And this is a hedge fund specializing in Asia ex-Japan. And it's run, that long blue line is running at about 50%. So typically, post the financial crisis, they've had about 50% net exposure. That's low relative to my experience of hedge funds and their history. You can see sort of before the financial crisis, it was running on average higher. We've had, you know, a month where it's gone above that 50%. I would only start to be cautious if we saw a number of months of hedge funds with up towards 100 exposure. So I still think from a sentiment point of view that the background is okay. So these support my view of the world, which I don't think we're yet at the dangerous phase in stock markets. So let me just conclude with some observations before going to questions. I think what's so interesting to me is that the world today looks so different from anything I've experienced in my nearly 40 years of investing. I've never seen a time when the outlook for the developed world looks so poor looking forward several years, and the outlook still, the relative position of the emerging world looks good. And I think that will mean we're going to continue to see, and that's the story that's already started and I think is going to be the big story of next year, of flows from the developed world flowing into the emerging world. And this is being boosted by things like QE2, etc. And markets have actually been fairly correlated to date, although the economic performance is very uncorrelated. But I think that this will drive probably valuations way beyond probably where they should be. And then my last observation is about where we sit today. I think Hong Kong is right at the center of this two-speed world, and I describe it as tectonic plates. You know, Hong Kong with its monetary policy linked to the US, the slow world, when it's, all its trade is, most of its trade is with China, and it's becoming the international, the place where the Chinese currency is being internationalized. And I think that means that we're in for a really interesting time in Hong Kong over the next couple of years. I expect to see some quite major changes. I think, you know, the stamp duty tax on Friday could be, you know, the start of these types of changes. You know, things that have never happened in Hong Kong before could happen in this very unusual world that we live in. Thank you very much.
So we don't have very much time, but I want to, everyone who has a question, I would like to answer, you know, I would like you to raise your hand. And but let me start off with one. Would you like to stand up there? Would you like to come back?
I was going to wander around, okay. If that's all right.
You mentioned that you take sentiment very seriously. Mr. Bolton has the honor of having launched a closed-end fund in London to manage his portfolio out here, and it sells at a premium of 10%. And I was wondering if you thought that was indicative of a bubble in your fund and in China. Meanwhile, other questions, please raise your hand.
I wanted to have an investment trust, a closed-end fund, because I didn't want to be at the mercy of short-term flows in and out of China, particularly buying, as you've heard, medium and smaller stocks. I find little logic for the premiums being above 10% recently. I see a little logic for that. And as we find, most closed-end funds one day will sell at a discount. So I actually think it's a negative. But whether it's an indicator of the bubble, maybe it is, I'm not sure. I'm probably not the best person to answer the question.
Other questions? Please raise your hand so I know. Okay, I'll go to you. And I'll go to you. Great.
Bill Meller from Bloomberg, Anthony.
Yes,
you're probably sick of hearing from me. Yeah. Some investors, like Hugh Hendry, the London hedge fund manager, have a completely opposing view to you, and they put it quite often a lot more stridently. You know, for instance, Hendry's got posted videos on YouTube of see-through houses in apartments in China to show how many empty ones there are. Does the argument of the bears ever sort of cause you to lose sleep, or in fact do you find it beneficial to you in the fact that they're talking the market down?
Yes, I mean, can you still help me? All right, good. I generally find it good news. If I was standing up here and everyone agreed with me and there were no bears, I'd be more concerned. And I think that may happen down the road at some stage. I'm not saying that it's all plain sailing in China. China has challenges. Changing the economy from an export-led to consumption-led is got challenges. I think Hugh Henry is worried about the government or the bad debts from local governments and bad debts from other areas, and the fact that some of the infrastructure spend is going into projects that won't see a return for many years. These are all challenges, but they don't, relative to the bull points, I don't think they overweigh the bull points in my view. As I said, I think the economy is going to slow down. I think infrastructure was very much yesterday's story. I'm less keen of investing there. You know, when China's taking 60% of world steel production, I wonder how sustainable that is. But so I'm less interested in those areas that feed off the sort of things that worry him. I'm keener on other areas.
There are two questions right here. Yeah. Okay, let's go right. And other people have questions?
Hi, Anthony. I'm Kathy Yang of Reuters TV. Hi. Given the inflationary pressures that we're seeing in China and in most parts of the emerging markets because of QE2, the flow of money into this part of the world, how is that going to influence the way you sector pick in China? You like consumers and banks, yeah. But how is that going to change going forward as we see those interest rate hikes and those hike in reserve requirement as we've seen last Friday?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to learn to live with a higher structural level of inflation in emerging markets relative to developed markets. So I think we're talking about a change, and I expect that to be an ongoing change. Obviously, if it gets out of hand, that's negative, and we've seen the Chinese authorities react to that. And the fact, I think, credit expansion has been too strong in China so far, and I think that they will tighten up on credit expansion next year, and that'll be a factor leading to lower growth in China. In terms of sectors, I think it very much plays into my view that China is a low-value manufacturing base for the world. I think those days are not over, but they're on their way out. The good news is I think the Chinese authorities fully realize that, and they realize that they've got to change the basis of the economy. When I meet with some of the textile companies in China, they talk about, well, they're putting capacity, they're going west to the center and west of the country, away from the eastern seaboard, and they're going out of China into Cambodia and Vietnam and places like that. And I think that will be the trend of those type of companies. So I don't like low-value manufacturing. I think that's going to be exposed. Some people get worried about inflation. You know, that's a reason not to be in some of the food manufacturers, the food companies. It may be in the short term, but on a medium-term basis, I'm not so worried about that.
Peter. And by the way, other questions, please. I want to get to everyone. So.
Anthony, you just said right now that Hong Kong sitting sort of at the meeting of these two tectonic plates that are shifting and causing unusual phenomenon to occur here is behind what we saw with the stamp duties, and you suggested that we might see other things that have never been seen before. Are you suggesting that could, for instance, lead to an end to the peg or the imposition of capital?
Yeah, I don't want to speculate on but I think what I'm trying, I think we should be prepared for big changes. Now, you know, the stamp duty change is—it's not treating the disease; it's treating the, you know, the symptoms, not the actual disease. So, I think that I don't know what the answers are. Perhaps some of you might tell me afterwards if you know what they are.
Other questions? Were there any hands over here? Did any of you at any of these tables have a question? Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, okay, great.
Yes, hi, Anthony. I'm Rita Deramas from Ignites Asia. You mentioned that you have been investing in China previously from the UK, and that you've moved to Hong Kong. You're working more closely with the team here in Hong Kong and in China, and that you've had more company visits over, I guess, since April. I want to find out if any of your views, macro and micro, about China have changed in the months that you've since you arrived in Hong Kong, and if any of these views have caused you to tweak your portfolio in a smaller, big way. And in relation to that, I just sort of noticed that some of the top 10 holdings in your portfolio, for example, have changed over the months, and therefore I'm trying to tie up if there's any relation to that.
I think in this business, one's views are always evolving. So, you know, you're never still in a view, and I'm sure, you know, if I came back in a year's time, my views will change. I don't think some of the basics, the core views, but the, I mean, one of my views on Chinese growth has changed. I thought we would see more signs of the economy slowing down over the summer and autumn, and that might lead to a loosening of measures. In fact, we've seen, well, I got that one 100% wrong. We've seen just the opposite. We've seen an economy which has grown faster than most people expected, and now I think the tightening measures will impact into next year rather than this year. There've been other things, you know, where perhaps my views have changed. You know, the way Chinese create champions in industries, I sort of knew about it, but being here and seeing the companies really drove it home. And it's, you know, in most markets in the West, large companies are, you know, when they get too large, they're hindered. Barriers are put up to stop them from growing. In China, you see the opposite often. Specifically on your question, yeah, one of my changes, I've become less keen on the big banks in the mainland, and I've become keener on the banks in Hong Kong relative to the banks in mainland. So that's one of the changes within the portfolio.
Sorry, we have time for one more question. Is there anyone on the table that I, Freddie, did I miss? Tara, oh, I'm sorry. I really apologize. I'm sorry, Tara.
That's okay. You talk about the liquidity flowing into emerging markets, and hot money into Hong Kong is a hot topic right now. If it ends, is it going to end in tears? Is the money that's flowing in going to be flowing out in a very dramatic way if we continue at this pace?
I don't know how it's going to end, but it seems to me that we have all the conditions there, as I say, for things to get overdone. And of course, if things get overdone, that produces negatives down the road. So, will the hot money hot money always does change eventually. So one day it will flow out and flow somewhere else. But I think it looks pretty set to me for the next year or two.
Put another way, are you thinking of buying a flat in Hong Kong?
I'm glad you asked that. I actually bought mine in April.
Are you thinking of selling a flat in Hong Kong? Anyway, wait a second. Do we have time for one more? I don't know.
Are you looking to make me an offer?
there is one other, and that will be our... Our last question is behind the corner, I think, over here.
Robin Fox, very, very quickly, what advice would you give to the People's Bank on monetary policy right now?
I don't think I'm the best person to give you it. You know, these money flows are really difficult. I mean, you know, we've seen these reserve rate requirement increases to unprecedented levels. It's going to be tough dealing with these flows. It is going to be difficult.
Okay, I think it's 2:00. I think we're over unless someone has some urgent. Did I miss anyone up here? No. I just want to thank you very much. We'd probably love to hear from you in a year. If you still own a flat, or even more if you don't, and if your portfolio has changed. And thank you very much for being a great audience.
Okay. Thank you.